Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with my co-host, Vas Larikos. Vas, how you doing?
As well as can be expected, Ken. Really disappointing to have another, just be outcoached, really, again, Kansas City. Seems that Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo really have the Ravens' number. And now you have a rash of injuries, and the season seems like it's on the brink earlier than I can really ever remember.
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly had a lot of injuries in previous seasons, early in the season. I remember back to 2015, it was that way in terms of Suggs getting lost at the opener. It was a right. Devastating blow.
12 with you lost Lewis and Webb in week two, and Suggs already was we didn't know if he was going to come back from that Achilles, but
he did early. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had a miracle rebirth in the 2012 championship season in their secondary, but they did lose. It was week four against the Cowboys. They lost both Webb and Lewis at the same time. And that looked like the end right there. Lewis came back, played very poorly when in the playoffs. A lot of people think he played great and whatnot. And he had a moment or two that were fantastic. And he had a lot of tackles, which were accumulated.
Jump targeting. On the pile at the end.
Well, and also accumulated targeting of him in coverage, which was pretty darn effective. So, I've seen a lot this last week that says Harbaugh's never done anything. And basically, you know, if you look at in 2012, he won the Super Bowl because of Ray Lewis. Well, that couldn't be further from the truth. Could not be further from the truth in terms of being rate.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, Jimmy Smith had a quote that Garnett, we were discussing it the other night, actually, that when he came on the team his rookie year, the defensive players were the coaches, and Harbaugh didn't have a heavier hand till later. That was out of Jimmy Smith's mouth at his retirement press conference, for what it's worth.
There are a lot of people who are especially fans of Rex Ryan. Now, Jimmy Smith didn't play for Rex Ryan because Rex was already gone to the Jets.
Rex was long gone.
Yeah, but in 2008, there were people who thought that, you know, and people on the defense who said Rex Ryan was the coach of that team, not John Harbaugh. Well, it does take a coach time to take the reins. And, you know, and if it took a few years, that's okay with Harbaugh. There's certainly very successful years. I would credit him for laying off a good set of defensive coaches and a terrible offensive coach he actually was making changes year over year with.
Yeah. Well, that was the story of the franchise. I remember the calls for Matt Cavanaugh under Billick way back when. That has been the story of the franchise in a lot of ways. Anyway, let's not get too far off track. But real quick, I did want to say Brian McKinney's apparently the legend of the game this week, which kind of raised my eyebrow a little bit.
Oh, my God. What for? That is really strange. Okay. Okay, so let's talk what's going on with the Ravens. Obviously, a pivotal game in terms of any sort of contention coming up. I think also there are coaching jobs that could be on the line as soon as the bye. If the Ravens win one of these next two games, which is, I don't think it's much higher than 50%. Let's put it that way. Might be 55, might be 57% that they win one of the next two. They're a dog at home
right. This
week against the Texans, and they'll probably be a more significant dog against the Rams next week would be my guess.
Well, and the Rams are going to have them any bye, right? Because they play tonight on Thursday. So that's another thing working against them.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Wonderful. So, you know, there are changes in theory that could be made as early as the bye week. What do you think those changes might look like if they were to occur? What sort of a change would the Ravens be willing to entertain at this point?
I think Zach Orr, I think Harbaugh's been very defensive of him, probably because he was his handpicked choice in the media availability this week. He went after Todd Monken and not Zach Orr. But at some point, if the defense is just not getting it done. I mean, I did a quick little back of the napkin, and Zach Orr's defenses are the only defense in the history of the franchise that have less than one takeaway per game over his tenure. Some of them were up over two takeaways a game, but everybody else was at least 1.2, 1.3, and he's at 0.9. And they said before the season that was going to be their identity, so that's pretty tough.
They want it to be their identity. It's a that's a hard-headed identity to force. And let me just also say that takeaways in the National Football League are way down over the years. So every time I've looked at Ed Reed's adjusted interceptions, you look at back to the big season was Night Train Lane in 1952. I think that's the one. Yeah, Night Train Lane is the one. Had 14 interceptions in 12 games. That was a less impressive number than Ed Reed's 9 in 16 games in 2008.
Right.
Because of the percentage of the number of interceptions per game in those two relative eras.
Passing's better. But just to put context to it, McDonald was at 1.7 per game just 2 years ago.
Yep.
And Orr's at 0.9. And Martindale before McDonald was at 1.2. And Mike Nolan, surprisingly, is the highest at 2.2. But that was Ed Reed's heyday.
Yep. That was the early Ed Reed days, that's for sure. All right. I'm not sure it would be Zach Orr. I think a more likely event is Harbaugh tries to reach into the hat again and pull out another rabbit like they did with Dean Pease coming in to sit over Zach Orr's shoulder. I'm not sure Zach would take well to that. I think there will be discussion, by the way, that despite the tough start, that Zach Orr is a coach that they want to hold on to. I mean, before the season, Ravens fans were certainly talking about like he was a head coach candidate. You know, get him ready, get Harbaugh out of here and make Zach Orr the coach. Well, they're not saying that anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think that, you know, he is still a young guy who has a potential future as a head coach in the league at some point in the future. And I would be loath to throw that away on what already looks like a lost season without really trying to see if he's a guy who has value. Because if he does, you know, and he leaves the Ravens, it's 2 third-round draft picks again.
Yeah. Yeah, for the minority and incentive there. That's the one that comes to mind. You know, I know the fan base has seemingly reached a breaking point or a really critical point with Harbaugh himself. I've been a critic of Harbaugh for a while, but I can never remember it really reaching this tune. But I think Bisciotti has too much respect for Harbaugh. Even if the players look like they've given up and he's lost the locker room, I still think he's going to be able to finish the season no matter what.
I'm not sure that's great if true. I'm not sure it's terrible either. I mean, if you give this a chance to play its way out. And if the Ravens, I mean, the Ravens are not going to recover under a new coach this season. I think we can agree on that.
Agreed, for sure.
A new coach is going to have to come in and make it his team. So the value you would have is that a new coach coming in would have this half season or this two-thirds of a season to basically say, I can make this my team, put me in my system, see if I can work with Monken or Orr. You get my handle on who these assistant coaches are so I can decide who I need to fire.
Right.
In this offseason, there would be value in that sort of thing. I don't like what I'm seeing right now in the back and forth between Monken and Harbaugh. I do not like that at all. And that's something the Ravens have typically kept in house. It's one of the things I would point to that I'm truly upset and truly blame Harbaugh for among other things. You know, have there been a few game management blunders over the years? Sure there have. I think there's been less than with other coaches. And especially with Tomlin in the same division making as many absolutely awful decisions as he does, it's really hard to point the finger too hard at Harbaugh on game management decisions.
I would agree with that. I think that Harbaugh's game management has been underrated, but I also think that his culture building has been a little bit overrated. And the irony of it is if this does become a retooling or rebuilding second half of the season, Harbaugh is the exact kind of coach you want because that's really in his wheelhouse. The issue I've had with Harbaugh is inability to raise the ceiling of the team. But just getting back to Orr, if he's not putting the players in position to develop and succeed, that's where you would want to make that change. And you already have a ready-made replacement in Chuck Pagano. You don't have that on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know how you can bring in Pease and Pagano and then bring in somebody else. At some point, you got to cut bait with Orr if that's where you want to go.
Yeah, you know, he has some tremendous advocates on the staff, most notably Chuck Smith, who's very important to the Ravens coaching. Mm-hmm. He's their pass rush coach, for those who don't know, but has done a lot of, he's a pass rush guru in terms of figuring out how to help people, you know, make the most of their God-given talent as pass rushers. Mm-hmm. But you know, he swore up and down that Orr was the guy, and not it wasn't Dean Pease coming in. It wasn't extra work that John Harbaugh did with the defense. It was Orr himself who turned the defense around from week 10 on, when he made changes in the secondary to do those things. It was Orr himself who, you know, fired up the team in terms of, you know, lighting a fire under some really weak players situation this year. I don't believe it's a culture thing. I don't believe so. I believe it's really, there's an age component and there is a enormous injury component to it. I mean, just, you're not going to be able to succeed when your entire defensive line is injured. That's what I had going into the Chiefs game, and it's a lot worse now.
I agree. But I will say some other teams have been able to overcome injuries to some extent. Detroit's defense was wiped out. They had a lot of guys on IR last year, and I think they won their division. Certain teams can, certain teams can't. It's, you know, it's tough when you have cluster injuries in the same position. Hopefully that's going to turn around a little bit this week. We'll get to the injury report in a couple minutes here.
All right, let's move on in this and talk about the two IR moves since last Friday. Nnamdi Madubuike lost for the year. I mean, I've talked about it all week, so, you know, I just maybe sit on it for about 30 seconds with you, but just incredibly sad. It has all of the syntax of a career-ending injury as opposed to just a season-ending injury. And the words I've heard from Harbaugh are very similar to the end of Jimmy Smith's career. Steve Smith's career.
Okay.
When he said, "I'll let him talk to you about that." And in his case, it was Steve Smith deciding to retire. And I think that's basically Harbaugh is now waiting for Nnamdi to do that, and basically saying, you know, the ball's in his court, deciding whether he wants to go or not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, neck injuries are not something you want to play around with. You have, you know, you could become paralyzed if you try to play through it and get hit the wrong way. It's certainly a shame. His loss has exposed the fragility of the Ravens pass rush in some ways. I'm a little bit curious how that would go. So Madubuike, according to Brian McFarland, would have, I believe, $30 million, give or take, in dead money that's dead, and then another 22 or so that's part of his guaranteed contract. If he retires, he's not entitled to that. If he doesn't retire, he is. But how do you, I mean, you're going to show up to training camp and say, I'm not going to play, but just still give me the money. I'm not quite sure how that, I think that would have to be litigated out in some way, because that's just an awkward situation.
I think effectively the contract's guaranteed against injury. So I don't know this for sure, but you can't force somebody into retirement. I know that. And if the club could come to a settlement with him, they could come to an agreement with him over an amount of money that would, you know, save them a few bucks and save him face. But I think this is the Andrew Luck situation all over again. Okay. And remember, Andrew Luck, he hung around and he wasn't going to leave without his guaranteed money. So I unfortunately for the Ravens, I don't think there's a way Nnamdi walks away from $22 million.
And I think there's one other caveat I'll just mention briefly, that if you insure the contract with Lloyd's of London or whoever, there's some kind of carve out where you can get credit back on your cap. And I think Cleveland is planning to do that with Deshaun Watson. And if I do recall, the Ravens did insure Madubuike's contract.
You're probably correct. And the last player they did it for, they've done it for a lot of players, but the last player they collected on that I can recall is Marcus Williams.
Okay.
So in his first 2 years, he missed some time and they were entitled to some, amount, and that amount is paid by the insurance company, but it goes into a category called returned by player.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there could be something with Madubuike where the Ravens get a cap credit back, but I don't think Madubuike is walking away from that money. I wouldn't expect him to. And luck situation.
Yeah.
All right, Broderick Washington also out for four games. He's a loss. He's a bigger loss, you know, when you had this compounding of missing all these linemen at one time. And, you know, his snaps are replaced by somebody who's even lower down on the totem pole, like Josh Tupou, who doesn't really play a three-tech, but is having to, because that's all the Ravens got.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an ugly situation, certainly on the art. Do you want to take us through the rest of the injury report from today?
Yes, absolutely. And I was going to categorize it by injury, but that got a little complicated. So we'll just go alphabetically on this laundry list here. Chidobe Awuzie, hamstring, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. Looked like he finished a game. I did notice he looked tweaked. He tweaked on one of the plays. Kyle Hamilton with a groin, according to Jeff Zarebeck. This occurred in practice on Wednesday. He was limited on Wednesday and now did not practice on Thursday. Marlon Humphrey with a calf injury, DNP 2 days in a row. There's a report that he's expected to miss a couple weeks. Lamar Jackson, hamstring, did not practice 2 days in a row. Looks like they're trying to float a smoke screen that he might play this week. Looks pretty doubtful by the back channels. Mm-hmm. Emory Jones, the third-round rookie, was limited. He has returned from shoulder. Travis Jones, knee. Now, here's something that's maybe more positive. Two limiteds in a row. Tyler Linderbaum with a calf injury, was limited on Wednesday, full on Thursday. Odafe Owe with an eye injury, was limited on Thursday. Patrick Ricard with a calf. Two DNPs in a row. I did see him on the sideline in Kansas City, but this one's really dragged on.
He's been 6.5 weeks no practice at this point.
That's a long time. Roquan Smith with the hamstring. Two DNPs in a row. Doesn't look like he's going to play. Ronnie Stanley with an ankle. DNP on Wednesday. Limited on Thursday. He looked pretty rough out there on Sunday. Brent Urban with a finger. Limited, then full. Kyle Van Noy with a hamstring, limited, then full. So Kyle Van Noy going full is definitely a positive development. Tez Walker with an oblique injury, did not practice Wednesday, limited on Thursday. And finally, maybe the best news, Nate Wiggins with an elbow, DNP on Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
Yeah, the Ravens very short at that corner position. I know we have discussions about that coming up in some elements later in the show, but the only healthy cornerbacks right now are Martin Tampa and the great Jaire Alexander, who has yet to come back since that showing at Buffalo. And so let's assume he's back. I still think Wiggins has to play, and they probably also need to bring up Marquise Robinson from the practice squad. Given the level of corners that they've been able to get around the league, the attrition is already pretty high. I would not leave Marquise Robinson on the practice squad any longer. I'd elevate him to the 53 right now. And especially if somebody from among that cornerback group is headed to IR, which I think, even if it maybe doesn't have to happen, maybe it should happen for one of them. So
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Just for reference, Jalen Armour-Davis played last week and had 5 tackles. I don't have the full stats here, but he did play for the Titans.
Mm-hmm. And can we go back to Emory Jones for a second?
Please.
Okay. So Emory Jones began to practice yesterday. It ends any possibility of an NFI redshirt year, and this opens the window on his return. So they'll have to activate him after 3 weeks, or they have to wait until next year. They'd revert him to IR. But that doesn't mean revert him to NFI, where his season doesn't count. Now, his season is already counting at this spot. I know the Ravens are hopeful of what they might get from Emory Jones, and with Stanley down, you know, they certainly could use a replacement at tackle. This is some potential value expended here for 2025 that maybe you'd like to keep as dry powder for 2029, frankly, at this point.
Agreed there for sure. You know, we saw that with Voorhees, and they did do it with Ojabo. Maybe a slight feather in Emory's cap. He did start as a true freshman at LSU. So, and he's a pretty young player. So we'll see what they get from him. Hopefully they get something positive.
I want to hit up on 3 mailbag questions related to Emory Jones. There's a lot of excitement related to him. Josh Stevens says, with Jones practicing today, do you think they will activate him within the 21 days or have him go back to IR for the season? I would be enormously surprised if they did not activate him, given that they've expended a lot to basically start him practicing.
Might as well at this point.
Yeah. Adam Costanzo, do you think the Emory Jones activation has more to say about Ronnie's health versus where Jones is at? Could he be a better answer at left tackle than Note Boom or Vinson for the remainder of 2025? I think he's going to play since we aren't redshirting him. I agree with the last statement, by the way. I think we just addressed that. Note Boom played actually pretty decently. I was fairly surprised in his the quality of his play against the Chiefs. Vincent, I still, my belief would be that he's not ready. But I'm not sure where he is in the totem pole of those three players. I would guess right now he's below the veteran Note Boom, but ahead of Vincent. That'd be my guess. But I mean, he hasn't practiced at all, and Vincent has, and he's had some live fire in the preseason. Where are you on that?
I can't see him playing left tackle. I could see him playing a different position that's maybe not as demanding, but you haven't taken a rep since you were in college, and now you're going to come in and play left tackle. I don't think so.
All right. We got a third one, Angelove85. Hi, Ken. The offensive line doesn't seem like the worst in the league based on your scoring. Maybe you will address this on FMGM, but do you think Emory Jones will help given no OTAs, preseason, et cetera? Keeping on NIL for the year seemed to be the best move. I mean, I agree with the last statement entirely. If they might have faced some sort of a grievance from the player if he says, I'm not hurt. These guys are just trying to, you know, drag me around on a fishing hook here for an extra year. He may have had some recourse to stop that from happening, but do I think he'll really help the Ravens this year? I think the chances actually are very limited. Yeah. What we could do is we could get a live fire experience with him and get some understanding of how much runway does he maybe need and where is he as far as the first data point.
To the first part of Andrew's question, the Ravens rank as the 11th best offensive line per PFF this week. They were actually four spots higher before the KC game, so that certainly aligns with your grading. The offense hasn't been the problem. You know, I keep coming back to that. The offense is putting points on the board, maybe not as many as you wanted against KC. The defense is really what's sinking the season so far.
Yep, I would agree with that. And you know, some of that I do think is the offense has a part of that blame by their failure to sustain drives. Mm-hmm. I think their barbell of results has been a negative for the defense, but you're
defense
right.
Defense got to get off the field themselves too. You know, they got to bear some responsibility.
Yes, I agree. And in particular, analytics is killing the Ravens this year. The last 2 weeks, you know, two teams that really understand how to play offensive football on fourth down have gone 7-for-7 against mm-hmm. them. And that's not just bad play. There's a lot of 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2, 4th-and-3 in there that are very, very difficult to stop. But it's still, it really hurts to be playing this many fewer snaps than the opponent.
They're not forcing teams to punt very often, and they're not generating takeaways. So you're going to be on the field a lot when that happens, especially when the rushing offense isn't what it used to be.
Yep. I'm with you. All right, so let's move on to some practice squad moves. Why don't you take us through these?
Did you want to discuss potential IR designations for any of these?
Yes. I think that's reasonable. So there are some potential IR designations here. If you think about it, the Ravens have two elevations they can make per week, which takes their roster to 55, and then they have 7 they can deactivate per week. So you get to 7 pretty quickly with a team like this in terms of deactivations you want to make. And they might end up actually with walking wounded on the peripheral of the roster. So it might be somebody like, I'll pick a player. It might be somebody like Marlon Humphrey, or maybe could even be Lamar Jackson is listed as the third quarterback this week.
Right. So they would technically, they're able to be playing shorthanded. They'd be playing a player mm-hmm. or maybe two players less that actually are capable of playing. I think they did that 2 years ago. Was it 3 years ago when they were really, really tight against the cap? And they did that a couple of times.
What they did was they had less than 53 on the roster, but they never were shorthanded on game day. And so that's a big distinction there. The one time that they were kind of shorthanded on game day, they activated 9 offensive linemen and one of them was Salah. And they certainly didn't want that to come to fruition, but it was a healthy body. And in a year like this, the kind of analogous move would be they'd activate Ajabo as a 5th outside linebacker in a game where they have no intention of using him.
Right.
And
right.
You know, put a couple snaps of some
special teams.
Yeah.
I did see he did make one play on kick coverage where he kind of blew up the almost like a stunt. And then TJ Tampa, somebody kind of looped around him from the left-hand side, which was an interesting way to kind of cover that kick.
That's really good usage. And it was a kick, not a punt, right?
Kickoff. Yep.
Yeah. Very good.
He was third from the left, whatever that position is. And he kind of took on two guys, and then the corner that was lined up all the way to the left circled around and then met the ball carrier where he was.
Okay. L3.
Ojabo kind of picked off his jammer.
Yeah. I sometimes forget whether L1 is on the inside or on the outside, you know, but I know L3 is in the middle of the five guys on that side.
Yeah. Okay. Pat Ricard, I mean, it just seems too late. You've been saying this for the last 3-4 weeks already now. And what's going on at this point?
I mean, I don't think it's too late to put him on IR now. And if you've got the replacement and you're using him, you're committing to 4 weeks of that. Because ZMP is already on the roster. If you don't like how ZMP plays, you bring up Lucas Scott to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly, with Ricard's status right now, I don't know how he's maintaining the illusion that he's going to be ready to practice any day now.
Right.
Because that's got to be their feeling, or I don't think they would continue this way.
Yeah, I mean, technically right now they're carrying 5 tight end/fullbacks on the 53. 5. That's a lot.
Yep.
Ronnie Stanley did not look good, although he was limited today. I think that injury could potentially be career threatening too. I mean, the same ankle, if I'm Ronnie and this is going to require surgery, do I want to go through another round of surgeries and another round of rehab and potentially be walking around with a limp for the rest of my life? I'm not sure. I think that's something else that we should take into consideration.
It's scary as hell, given they just signed him, of course. This is twice in a row, you know, they just signed him and he has a big injury.
Yeah.
It's sad as hell, but they've really, you know, the fact that he was back at practice on Thursday is to me a very good sign about Ronnie Stanley's commitment to this organization.
Yes.
And I'm really happy to see it. Even if it's just limited, you know, hopefully he's still on the field in some way tomorrow and a full go at some point next week. And if they have to go another game with no boom, then they have to go another game with no boom.
The other one I would look to might be Roquan. He just seems like he might need a little reset. He kind of looks like trying to pack it in a little bit. Against Detroit, he was barely even challenging. And he's been quick out of the locker room, failing to give post-game interviews. So I could see him potentially landing on IR for 4 weeks or so.
Certainly a possibility. Devontae Walker, I don't know how serious the injury is really, but if it's an oblique, those things can linger. We always hear it from with pitchers and whatnot, how serious those injuries are. But if he's just appears to be on his way back since he moved to limited from DNP. But if there's any question about him going, he is the kind of player that you could sit down for 4 weeks if you need to, if you really need that roster spot.
Right. 6 wide receivers is a lot to activate.
It's a good special teams player, though. And honestly, when you have this kind of a up and down the roster problem and you're having to elevate nose tackles and whatnot, you're going to have a lot of trouble filling out your special teams units because those units require players who are fairly athletic. And a lot of those guys are not available to you anymore. And not only that, your elevations are not available to you because you're using them on interior linemen. So if you do that, then you can't elevate, you know, Chandler Martin to play special teams, or you can't elevate, you know, Jonah Gray or JT Gray if he comes back healthy again.
I hope Walker gets as many reps as he can this year because he's really showing something. He could be part of the solution long term, a receiver, help him save money from a big money contract potentially. But to the bottom line, I agree that one or two of these players probably needs to be put on IR so that one or two of the defensive linemen can be put on the 53 so they can activate practice squad players for special teams. Yeah,
the ones they need to. Let's talk about the practice squads. Had some moves here. Sam Mustipher, who was a signing a couple of weeks ago, a guard center who's been with the Ravens previously, probably his best position at this point is center as a backup. They released him and they signed Kenyon Green. Now, it's easy to get these two guys confused because they're both guards, Kenyon Green and Kendrick Green. Kenyon Green is a former number one pick of the Texans, 15th overall. Kendrick Green is the Buffalo guard.
Okay. Yeah.
He may still be there, but he certainly was most recently there.
Kenyon Green out of A&M, I believe. He was the player in the trade for Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. went to the Eagles, and then he got released there. And the Ravens are scraping the barrel here. And you never give up on talent. If he was a first-round talent at some point, you know he has measurables.
Right. It's he's a fairly big. He's a gourd-shaped guard, kind of a pear-shaped guy you like at the position. I'll tell you this. I had my friend on from Houston, who is my college radio partner, and he said, you might want to not rely on him for information you'd get. He doesn't have a high retention rate.
Okay.
That is a really negative thing. Now, he has the guy I'm talking about is Charlie Polillo, is kind of a Houston sports legend, but he has a very abrasive, acerbic style about him. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to score points, making comments like this about players a lot. I wouldn't, you know, we need to learn that Kenyon Green is an idiot the way Kenny Young is an idiot by this happening on our watch. So I hope that you know, they see something that they really like in him that they can mold into a player again.
Yeah. A former first rounder on the practice squad is a good development as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. All right. They also signed a cornerback, and that's Amani Oruwariye.
Yeah.
Oruwariye, who's 29 years old. He played for Dallas and Detroit in the NFC. Very unexciting signing, and this makes me really want to protect Marquise Robinson at this point. He's career 9.6 yards per target allowed. In 2024, he allowed 11.8 yards per target. He's got 27 penalties in 2,940 career snaps, which is an awful lot. I would say he's certainly behind Marquise Robinson in terms of the totem pole that I would want to see guys at corner after the fine preseason Marquise had. There's no doubt about it. I'd want Marquise activated this week as he could be as low as the fourth cornerback or as early as the fourth cornerback, but he could, even if he's the fifth corner, I'd still want him active.
Yeah. Oruwariye is a player I'm somewhat familiar with. He's relatively sticky. He has a really hard time getting his head around locating the ball. Sounds familiar, right?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? A couple guys.
I'm a little bit surprised they're going the veteran route right now with the practice squad. I would almost, because these players are going to take a week or two to assimilate to the team. And I would almost say, let's see where you are in a couple weeks. And if you're going to be more in a retool mode down the stretch, I'd rather go with some younger guys than some of these veterans. And that applies to the next guy we're going to talk about for sure.
Yeah, they do have a chance to change that, by the way. The practice squad is a fluid thing, and they pay per week for these guys. So the veterans make a little bit more money, but it's not enough to be really. Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Concerned about that from a cap perspective. They are limited to 6 veteran spots. So I didn't see who got released for Oruwariye, but it had to be.
They had a spot open because they promoted Urban, I believe.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right.
Yep.
But they picked up Josh Tupou too, and he's down there. Anyway, I think they might have gotten rid of a receiver at some point to make room for somebody, because they have guys. Anthony Miller, I know, did get cut for exactly that reason. But yeah. Keith Kirkwood fits into that veteran group as well.
Mm-hmm. And then Kendricks is the one I was referring to. Eric Kendricks, been around for a long time, dealt with injuries for several last couple of years, came in for a workout, did not latch on. I guess he wanted to be part of the 53. I am kind of happy that he didn't, because I kind of want to see what Jay Higgins and even Jake Hummel and Trenton Simpson and Teddy Buchanan can do. You know, I think there's a reasonable chance they can play to a decent level comparable to Roquan, because they're more athletic at this point.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I think that people, again, Kendricks comes in, works out, leaves without a contract, and the people who hate the Ravens organization right now, or who want Harbaugh gone, or have some alternate agenda, are all saying, look at this. Even decent defenders are refusing the Ravens and their crappy system. And that's not what happened. I mean, Kendricks refused a practice squad spot because he right. wanted to be on the roster. That's right. what happened. Okay. And they might have told him, hey, it's all open. We got a lot in flux right now. And, you know, Roquan's might be going on IR, and Kendricks didn't like the terms of the deal. It has nothing to do with that. I mean, honestly, yeah. Kendricks, he needs to take whatever the freaking employment he can get in the NFL right now. That's where he is at this point in his career. The thing that surprised me, and I was very happy to see on the injury report, his absence is Teddy Buchanan, because he didn't play at the fourth quarter of the game against the Chiefs. And so that essentially means the Ravens are one healthier than I thought they were at inside linebacker.
Right. I want to see, you know, I think it's too early to cut bait on Simpson. That was a third round pick. I want to see him earn some snaps and see what he can do. He's probably the most athletic out of the whole group. Let's see what he can do. But just back to Kendricks, I think that's exactly what happened with Green. Didn't Green work out towards the latter part of last week? And then he didn't sign. Then maybe he looked around and said, well, nobody's going to give me a 53. And then he came back. So who knows? Yeah. Maybe Kendricks will come back next week.
Could be, and in particular if Roquan is hurt. But you know, I mean, maybe Kendricks is the guy. May certainly go into the street and looking for a Mike linebacker is something you could do, because it's a deep size and shape pool of inside linebackers. But you know, I kind of got the impression that Teddy Buchanan was going to take over. He might even get the green dot in terms of being the Mike linebacker. It would be consistent with the way the Ravens have done it in the past. It could also go to Hamilton
if he's healthy. I thought for sure Hamilton, but who knows now?
Yeah. And then you know, you're probably going to get what you want in terms of Simpson playing some will in a game like this. And I really hope they would play a lot of dime. But again, the Hamilton injury is just a dark cloud over everything here.
Well, at least Lowry will likely be active this week. I was really surprised he wasn't last week.
It was surprising, but they've still only got 3 safeties on the roster here. And they're in the same kind of position of probably not wanting to move a safety up to dime. So they're talking about, you know, how committed are they going to be to the nickel this week? And unfortunately, I think the answer is still quite committed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Tampa and maybe Kane, you know, dime is probably where Kane fits best, I would say. So,
right.
Anyway, let's move on to elevations if you're ready.
Yeah, sure.
So another player that I think could factor into the inside linebacker mix is Chandler Martin. And we'll get to this, but I think a lot of folks, Ravens fans, either don't remember, they were too young, or misremember the 2002 season. But it was really exciting to have a group of young players fight their way to 7-9
Damn
and reset
straight.
The cap and basically, you know, give them cap space that they could then carry forward for the next decade. So if you could find a guy like Chandler Martin, elevate him, and he becomes a rotational piece for you, you're all the better. So that's one of the players that could potentially be elevated this week if they can make room with some IR designations.
Yeah, and even as the cap was getting tight for the Ravens towards the end of Joe Flacco's rookie deal, they had a lot of money invested in the defense, and they're paying a lot of money to players like Lewis and Reed, who were at the end of their careers. Mm-hmm. They found a bunch of undrafted inside linebackers among that group that performed very well for them. Danelle Ellerby had the quarterback hit that won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, sure.
And Jameel McClain was a heck of a player in his time and has gone on to other employment with the Ravens after that. It's just
Josh Bond. Zach Gore. I mean, I could name a dozen linebackers. Ray Lewis elevated anybody who was next to him.
Chandler Martin, certainly a possible addition to the 53. I think Marquise Robinson, because they need to protect him, and we're at the point where attrition at corner is already great enough that I'd be worried about losing a player like him.
Yep.
But here's the big like wrench in the works here. How do you get Tyler Huntley onto the roster? Because you either have to add him to the 53 or elevate him from the practice squad for the game. One of those two for him to be the backup quarterback, because I'm sure they don't want to put Lamar in.
Well, somebody's going to have to go on IR, somebody else. You're not going to play with four defensive linemen. You can't do that, I don't think. I mean, maybe they could try, but I think that'd be a mistake. And Huntley should be active and wouldn't be surprised if he got some packages. I think they want to maybe have that dynamic if Rush is not getting it done, and he probably helps Derrick Henry a little bit more than Cooper Rush does. So, yeah, maybe it's a smokescreen, but apparently John Harbaugh brought Tyler Huntley up unprompted multiple times this week already. So I'm pretty sure you're not going to go in a game with one quarterback, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. They have to figure out how they're going to get him on the roster. Taven Bryan would be another guy if they could go to if they needed a extra, really a three tech. His role is kind of limited by being a smaller defensive tackle, but those four guys would all be possible elevations this week. In addition to players like Tupou, who aren't yet on the 53, and the Ravens still need a defensive lineman. So it's not like there aren't other players who are already kind of in line for some of these activations.
If Jones can't go, I would say Okoye for sure. Obviously, Peebles, Jenkins, and Urban are already on the 53. And then I would probably go to Bryan. I wasn't super impressed with Tupou last week. I did think Okoye had some bright spots, and that's a player that hopefully they can develop into something. So if Travis Jones can go, then you elevate Okoye, and that's your five. So you only, and then you have one more spot to go to a different, to go to Huntley.
Well, you have only two spots total. So you have Okoye. If you have Okoye, Huntley, and Marquise Robinson, say that you want to activate.
Well, yeah, then you got to go to IR.
You got to go to IR. If you want Chandler Martin, you got to go to two IRs.
Yep.
So it is quite a parking lot puzzle to work through. I mean, if you want Tupou back, and you probably do need Tupou back if Jones can't go,
mm-hmm.
What the hell do you do then? Because somebody else has got to go to IR.
Well, if you have Jenkins and Okoye, those are your two noses, right? I think you can go with two nose tackles.
No, I'm fine going with two nose tackles, but I can't get up to five defensive linemen otherwise.
Yeah, then you'd have to go to Bryan. Yeah.
Oh, okay. The problem is they don't have the spot for this third nose tackle, whether it's Tupou or Bryan. I'm okay with either.
No, I agree. Either Travis Jones or another extra player's got to go, but at least one has to go to IR, and if Jones can't go, at least two. At least two.
It's a ugly situation to be sure. All right. We had all kinds of questions about the offensive line come in as well, but let's maybe hit on a couple of those. Let's see, what do we have that's specific to this? Okay. Mark Redding says, what's the likelihood the O-line problems contribute to Henry's decline? Follow up. If Henry declines for whatever reason, who steps up to take gravity share? I'm using gravity to mean the person other than Lamar who the defense keys on.
Keaton Mitchell, the guy, you know, I think the injury situation gave them an opportunity to save face. And activate him and say, well, we, you know, now that we have a reason to activate him, the likelihood the O-line's problems contribute to Henderson's decline? 1,000%. 1,000%. We've made this point a million times. Running back's a dependent position upon the offensive line. That's the reason why you don't want to invest in a running back, especially if it's going to harm your line. And it's not only a Derrick Henry problem. If I can give you a quick Saquon Barkley stats, in 2024, he had 5.8 yards per carry and 4.1 yards before contact. They let their offensive right guard go. He went to the Chargers. Now he's at 3.0 yards per carry and 1.7 yards per contact. And that's Saquon Barkley, the generational all-pro 2,000-yard player. So, you know, I think that – I know everybody wanted – there was supposed to be a running back resurgence last season, and everybody thought running backs, you know, were now more valuable and they weren't devalued. Guess what? They're still devalued. Offensive line drive the running game.
And Lamar Jackson. I don't want to defuse your hyperbole there with 1,000% and a million times it's happened before kind of stuff. But I will say this, that Derrick Henry's fumbles have been a part of what's going on. Yeah. And he does bear responsibility for that. And he's the most stand-up player the Ravens have right now in terms of taking personal accountability for anyone, not being ashamed of the microphone pointed in his face, sometimes even seeking the microphone himself. Yeah. To explain that, not to talk about the great game he's had, just to explain the, you know, the poor one he's had. But I think it's more like 60% that the offensive line would be the downfall of Henry, as opposed to something Henry is doing is the downfall of Henry. And I think also, you know, the injury to Lamar would be another huge contributing factor.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that they were 1,000% determined of his production. 1,000% they made some impact. But anyway, I won't debate semantics with you. You know, now there's this notion that Derrick Henry has to get 20 to 30 carries this week, no matter what. And I know we talked a little bit in the production meeting pre-show about this whole concept that, you know, the Ravens are doing something wrong on its face by not giving Derrick Henry more touches. Would you like to opine on that one?
Yeah, I'm going to have that as a separate pod that I'm recording on Saturday, but it's just the sort of thing that an ex-quarterback like Dan Orlovsky should know better than to say. And I'll say this. My research is first principles. That's what I want to do. I want to do first principles report. I do not want to be an aggregator who looks at what other people said and tries to elicit reactions from Ravens fans. That's not what I do. But this particular thing pisses me off so much, I'm doing a special episode on it.
Pisses me off too. It's the same concept. They run before they win, or they run because they win. They win because they run. That's you can apply that to Derrick Henry's carry.
Very true. Very true. You know, grabbing the interior line depth. Do you feel like the acquisition of Kendrick Green is a
Kenyon?
I just made the mistake again. I told people not to make the acquisition of Kenyon Green is a 2026 move. That my personal feeling is I'm very happy the Ravens are still making moves for 2026 in 2025, even though the 2025 season is on fire. I think you need to do both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think especially when the 2025 season's on fire, that's when you want to look even more to 2026. And I do think you could be a potential replacement for Falele if that's the player that is not re-signed, or Voorhees. I mean, you know, you want talent in the building. You want talent on the shelves. You want to stock the shelves, and then you let them compete and see what happens. So I would definitely not be trying to sell, you know, trade a second round pick for an upgrade at guard at this point. I think the Ravens really need to seriously consider being sellers.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think, by the way, that also should be the topic of an entire pod in terms of, you know, how much for what player and whatnot. But the kind of players we're talking about trading are some of the Ravens' best young players. They're fourth-year players on expiring contracts. A fifth-year player like Owe, who's on the extension. Mark Andrews would be in the group on an expiring contract. But I don't even want to contemplate the possibility of trading Travis Jones. I think they should be doing everything they can to re-sign him. And Isaiah Likely as well. But I think, you know, maybe desperate times call for desperate measures. And if the price is right, you have to consider it for either player.
Yeah, I personally believe the Ravens are long overdue for a quasi-rebuild or retool, a quick one, not a four-year downturn, mm-hmm. but you can turn it around in a year. You saw the Rams do it. You saw some other teams a year or two is all it takes if you draft well. They haven't done it since 2002. That's a long time ago, you know. And here's the advantage of being sellers. A, you're likely to get a better draft pick because your record's not as high. Throughout all seven rounds, your draft pick's higher. You have cap savings for any players that you trade during the season. Half of their salary cap comes off your cap. You have more draft picks because you're acquiring capital from the players you're trading. And maybe an under the radar is you have more playing time to develop the younger players. So those would be four benefits to becoming sellers if the situation becomes that dire.
Completely agree on all four elements. And I think one of the questions the Ravens will ask themselves, because it looks like 2026 is going to be a good draft capital year for the Ravens. 2027 is the year that all of their lost free agents from this offseason, if they come to fruition, would come due anyway. So they get, you know, picks between rounds 3 and 7 for lost free agents. If they can hard code some of that right now, and get an extra round on that, I don't have a problem taking 2027 draft capital return, which could be very attractive to the acquiring team.
For sure. And it would solve the problem of having stacked contracts all coming due the same year, like you may mention it too many times.
Yeah, so, you know, earlier in the year, before the season said, I said, would you trade, you know, Tyler Lindebaum for the 33rd overall pick? I don't think I think there are some people who would say, no, don't do it. Right now, I mean, I don't even know what Tyler Linderbaum's value is like. He's probably a fourth-round comp pick in 27. If you could get a third in 27 for him and lock that in right now, I'd probably do it. Yeah. If you could get a second, I would leap at it. Or a third in 26, I would leap at it. But obviously we're in a different place right now. The Ravens, the remainder of their 2025 season doesn't have a lot of value. You mentioned that you get a chance to look at Corey Bullock for the rest of the year and see if he's your guy going forward, or you draft somebody with a second round pick or a third round pick.
I'd be a little bit cautious going overboard on the offensive line because you don't want to put the quarterbacks in position to get hurt. Mm-hmm. But besides that, any other position, any player that's an impending free agent, and even some of the bloated contracts, if you could even get something for Roquan or Derrick Henry, I'd look at that too. But I don't know if you can. But anyway, I do think that it might be time. It might be in The Godfather, when the Clemenza was giving Michael the pistol that he was going to use in the steakhouse. He said, you know, every 10 years, you got to have these bloodbaths. It's good for business. You know, you got to wipe it all out. I don't know. For some reason, that quote jumped in my mind in this situation.
Forgotten that. yeah, there's certainly a lot of that in some businesses. All right. Anyway, Voss, I think we're at the end here of today's set of topics. Obviously, a very, very busy week. We missed a couple questions, I think.
Let's hit the rest of the questions.
So Adam Costanza says, with Lamar presumably missing the Texans game, will this finally be the game Keaton Mitchell is active? Have to think we'll lean heavily on the run game.
Yes, I believe Keaton Mitchell will be active because every player that's healthy is active. They're going to need some type of explosive threat besides Lamar. And I do think Lamar's been playing hurt. I've come to that conclusion in the last game. And I think that's why you have an extensive injury report this week that's listing guys with fingers and eyes that practiced, because the Ravens could get in trouble if they didn't disclose that earlier.
I don't know that they can make up for it. It's kind of like they're already pregnant if they've been, you know, fishing around with the injury report in the past. I don't think, you know, coming clean now would do it. But they might have had a talking to by the league, and they said, you know, you got to do this. Harrison Kunkel has a question. He says, Ken, do you think there needs to be a philosophical change on how the defense is built? In the 2000s, the defense seemed to be built with a focus on the front seven, where they seem to have gotten cheaper there now, minus Matabike, and more focus on the secondary. This has definitely been a front-to-back built team. If you look at the Patriots of their championship years, they were a front-to-back built team. Now, it's not like they didn't have any great players up front. We know they had Vince Wilfork and Seymour for a few years before they traded him for a first-round pick. They had decent linebackers. They never had really, you know, top-end star linebackers like Jared Mayo and who's the other guy? Dante Hightower?
Brewski.
Yeah, Teddy Brewski was a good one.
Yeah, I somewhat disagree with Mr. Kunkel here. I think the secondary was a top priority throughout the 2000s. You had C-Max and Stark 2 years in a row. When you already had Rod Woodson, you spent a day two – well, not wasn't a day two pick then, but Kim Herring was a third-round pick. You had Deron Jenkins in the second round. I think the real problem is they were not hitting on outside linebackers. They haven't really hit on an outside linebacker since Matt Judon. And that's been, 2006 or 2007, I believe. And you could say, Owe's having a down year. And for a first-round pick, I don't think you can call him a hit at this point. Who else have they hit on? I mean, it's really Matt Judon.
Bowser, maybe.
But, yeah, I guess you could say Bowser.
Judon was more recent than that, wasn't he? Yeah, he's a 2016 draft pick.
2016, right.
Yeah.
So, Judon, Zadarius. It's really they're investing more in the skill positions than they have in the past, and you got to take away from somewhere. And that's why, in my view, that I've held for a long time, you want to go cheap at inside linebacker and running back. And that allows you to have good trench play and good skill position play and good secondary. You can't have it all unless you're going to have $500 million in dead money.
And you know what, for a minute, let's just thank goodness that the Ravens didn't go all in on a player like Parsons. Yeah. I mean, that would have been an absolute disaster right now. They've been sitting here with two first-round picks traded that were looking to be good first-round picks. You know, they might be the 10th draft. They might have the 10th pick in this draft. They might have higher than that, but they might have the 10th pick in this draft this year, the 13th pick or something.
That's
and it would look incredibly stupid.
I mean, go ahead. Well, there's value to having a player like Parsons over on contract long term. I mean, he's a game wrecker, but you're giving up two high first round picks at this mm-hmm. point, or at least one potentially.
Yeah, hopefully this doesn't get repeated in 26 with the Ravens. They'll still have Lamar Jackson, and they'll have a lot of the building blocks they need, and they'll have great draft picks. But I just the thought of having a huge bloated contract that they picked up for a year like this would be really just devastating. I mean, in a sense, that's what they have with Ronnie Stanley right now.
Yeah.
And it's, just, you know, it's potentially, you know, beating them. And other than that, they don't really have such a contract on the team that was just signed this year. Thank goodness is all I can say.
Times like these, you want to get lean. You want to get lean in your operations and then see. So we'll see what the next two games bring. Hopefully they come out with some fight. You got Mark Andrews saying that they're a bunch of fighters in the locker room yesterday. So hopefully that's true.
Let's see it. All right. Brad McGowan has the last question here. Actually, I think you have one from Garnett too. But yes. Brad McGowan says, hey, Ken, we talked about how great Travis Jones is, but would the fact that he seems to get injured at some point each year make you hesitant to give him a market value deal? I'm starting to get worried. I don't know the nature of the injuries, whether he's had chronic issues, and I'm not even sure if it's an ankle one time and a knee the other. Obviously, two lower leg issues is very bad. Travis Jones is the heart and soul of the Ravens pass rush. He's the guy who drives everything around him. When he's healthy and right, the Ravens have a decent pass rush. When he's not, they don't.
Yeah.
And they need him to get him right. And if any hope remaining in 25 involves Travis Jones getting right.
Definitely agree with that. It's unusual to have injuries on the defensive line. I mean, I remember Brandon Williams, Haloti Ngata, they were Iron Man. I mean, they rarely missed a game. But what is market value, right? If you're an injured player, that affects your market value. So maybe they can get him cheaper. That would be my hope. Maybe you can get Isaiah Likely and Travis Jones cheaper than you would have at the start of the season. Those are the two guys you look to keep, and everybody else you try to see what you can get for them.
Those are the top two on my list. I think for one thing, Isaiah Likely, I think you keep him. He's real value that you can add that also keeps Lamar happy. Now, I know Lamar would probably love to keep Mark Andrews also, but I think it's probably one or the other.
Yeah.
And I think Likely is the younger player, and I think those two will become the kind of connected at the hip players that Andrews and Lamar have been. So hopefully that works out and that makes him happy. Otherwise, the wide receiver core is young and talented, and next year they're all still here. So Bateman is here for several years. Hopefully that connection grows more than it, that seemed to have regressed a little bit this year. Zay is here for at least two more years, including a fifth-year option. I wouldn't think that there'd be any chance the Ravens would not pick that up. So still some exciting times ahead, I think, for Jackson and his weapons that are around him.
Yeah, you could say receiver is the best position on the team this year. That's maybe the first time in team history. But let's get to Garner West's question here. Do you gentlemen see a steady decline in attendance and prices of the home games due to losing and injuries? Also, do you think that will, I guess, could play a part in Bisciotti giving a press conference to give his thoughts on the team if the downward trend continues for the organization?
I think there's some assumptions in what Garnett is saying that are probably not really true at their heart. Now, first of all, let's talk about the quote-unquote ticket-selling problem. The ticket-selling problem exists in the secondary market and not in the primary market. It doesn't really exist in the primary market, even if the Ravens have a few tickets for sale themselves anyway. They've essentially sold out these games to people who pay a very lofty price as season ticket holders and guarantee them that they'll be there every game. If their season ticket holder base were threatened because the team didn't have good long-term prospects, that would be another matter, but they've never really had that problem because the season ticket holder base largely trusts the Ravens to do the right thing to keep the organizational ship afloat. But I think that the other thing goes on there is that the season ticket holders are the ones who bear the brunt of any reduction in demand. Those, you know, if you're a season ticket holder, particularly if you're in the 500 level, you know, there's just not a lot of marginal demand for such seats. And that's very painful. You know, I don't really consider myself as having that problem, but I will say this. I don't like having the rug pulled out from under me and being given a product on the field that sucks after I've paid for it. So my problem isn't necessarily in terms of what I can get for my tickets. It's about seeing a quality product on the field with my tickets.
Right. Right. You know, it comes down to coaching in a lot of ways. If the coaches are coaching sound football and they have the X's and O's where they need to be, the Jimmys and the Joes, even a lesser quality, can still put a good product on the field. Mm-hmm. I do think, to Garnett's point, that could be what tips Bisciotti over the edge to say it's finally time to make a move from Harbaugh if there are empty seats in the playoffs, not the playoffs, down the stretch, and it becomes a little bit of an embarrassment. That could be the way the fans force his hand.
Okay, so you're saying enough fans saying, I'm fed up with this, even if I've already paid, I'm not going to show up. We look around the stadium, there's a lot of purple. Well, I'll just tell you, it was a 90-degree day in Kansas City this last week, and the Chiefs were kicking the snot out of the Ravens on the field, and those seats were empty in the second half. Wow. I mean, I don't know how entitled the Chiefs fan base is right now, but
spoiled.
That's probably what they are, honestly. I don't mind being called spoiled. And I certainly don't mind when a player who puts the effort on the field, like Kyle Hamilton does, says that. Was it a tone deaf comment? Is it one that he shouldn't have made? Well, maybe. It doesn't particularly bother me.
It rubs me the wrong way because I think for a long time, especially after the second Super Bowl, any criticism of the organization was met with, well, they are the cream of the crop. They're the best. How dare you question them? And now they've made one conference championship game appearance in 12 years, and the benefit of the doubt should have been lessened. So that did rub me the wrong way.
Okay, well, fair enough. They've been consistent winners, at least on the field, whether or not, and a consistent playoff team with Lamar I'm perfectly happy with in terms of what I'm getting in exchange of product on the field. I don't even really mind a rebuilding year like this as long as it's well directed.
Yes.
You know, as long as it's 1 year.
Yes.
And that's what 2002 was. You pointed to it earlier. I mean, it was a very exciting year. I mean, it was a 7-9 season, but I mean, they were in there fighting away like hell that season. And in some ways, it reminds me of like the 1982 Orioles just coming up short. The 1982 Orioles were a lot better relative to all of Major League Baseball, but they lost on the last day of the season after winning three straight against the Brewers to tie it up down the stretch. Mm-hmm. A season like that can be extremely entertaining, even though it doesn't ultimately have the end we want. The playoff success and the ability to get the home playoff games they need to get it done has been a real problem for this organization. And, you know, the one time they were able to get the AFC Championship game at home, they didn't convert it. So, you know, we're working with a small sample size, but, you know, I'm basically been happy with the product on the field. That's not the issue. One year downturn I can live with too.
It's the don't critique me because we know what we're doing and we're above reproach. That's what irritates me.
That's fair enough. You know, that really is fair enough in that sense. And I'm glad Kyle came out and apologized for that. It's the kind of thing it certainly doesn't hurt to do it. And it seems sincere. Whereas if you want the prototype for the insincere apology, watch Phil Hellmuth after he's gone off on a rant on someone at a poker table and how he apologizes. It's always a conditional apology. I'm sorry if I offended you. Go to hell, Phil.
That's funny.
There's an article in the Wall Street Journal a few years ago that had like 11 types of insincere apologies, and it always dealt with some basically conditional component to what the person was putting on it. Outstanding article. I wish I still had it that I could I could give it to people. Yeah,
very good. Well, on that happy note.
Yeah. All right. Well, Voss, always a pleasure doing this show with you. And even I can get some entertainment not only out of that, but we can really commiserate and try and think about how we would redirect the ship if we were in charge, which we are not, but that's part of the fun of Friday Morning GM. Tell folks where they can talk to you online and a brief update on your restaurant.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, Ken, definitely a pleasure doing this show with you. I look forward to continuing with down the path this season. Whether it goes right or wrong, the GM topics will be front and center. So I'm happy to be in the saddle with you there. I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. Fiamata is the name of our new restaurant, opened a little bit over 6 months now, 7 months. And we would love to have you consider us for any of your corporate holiday parties located at 2900 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg, Maryland.
Right out there at the end of 795. It's not a hard drive if you live anywhere, kind of in the northwest kind of corner of the beltway or the city or whatever. It's fairly easy to find. And I've been there a couple times and like the pizza, like the rigatoni. So I've got a couple of things I could recommend if you're interested. You can DM me on that too, and I'll give you a unbiased review. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. These are trying times. Listenership still seems to be good right now. That might change, of course, and I understand that. And I think Voss is right on the money that this is the show you want to make sure you don't miss going forward for the rest of the season with all of the activity that's likely going to be focused on what Eric DaCosta does with the rest of the season. For Voss Larikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.